Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's very special Christmas night, Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, you can always hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, for the first time, Monday Night Raw falls on Christmas night, and the WWE, in their infinite wisdom, decided that they would have this Christmas night show, and they sold out in Chicago. Now, Chicago fans, look, we got a lot of fans who listen to us from Chicago, and I'm not going to sit here and you know, run anybody down for what they want to do. But if you in 2018 are still cheering and chanting for CM Punk, it might be time to find a new hobby. I mean, I'm just going to tell you that right now because I don't even believe you want him back. I just think you want to disrupt the show. CM Punk is not coming back. He's not coming back to the WWE. And I'm going to be brutally honest with you, and I very seldom do I put down wrestlers in their real life. I may put down their skills in the ring. I may say that they don't have a good image. I may say that they're not being well used or they had a bad match. But CM Punk would not piss on you guys if you were on fire. And I, for the life of me, I have no idea why you think he is the end all and be all of professional wrestling when the truth be told, he walked away from it very easily. Couldn't give a damn about coming back to it, and obviously doesn't love it. You know, we talk a lot about people, and you say, well, you know, the people get burned out after a while. The WWE did them dirty. No, no, let's talk real. You want to talk real? Let's talk real. There are people right now hungry for success who would gladly do whatever they had to do to get to the top where CM Punk was. And then there are those rare people like a Ric Flair, and even in other industries like a Mick Jagger, certainly do not need the money. They do not need the money. They do not need the hassle. They do not need to be traveling all over the world at 70 years old. But they do it. And the reason they do it, guess why? Because they love it. And it's an integral part of their life. And they couldn't imagine themselves not being out there doing something. It's the reason Mae Young and the Fabulous Moolah kind of toned their image down to be two old, funny old bats in the later part of their career because they said, you know, we love wrestling and it's the only way to keep us near it. They didn't need the money. Ric Flair doesn't need the money. Mick Jagger doesn't need the money. I can name you 100 people who do not need the money. But they keep right on doing what they do, and the reason they do it is because they love it. CM Punk does not love wrestling. Because if he did love wrestling, he'd still be doing it somewhere. Daniel Bryan has clearly said, if the WWE does not allow me to wrestle, I'm gone because I'm wrestling again. You know why? Because he loves it. Not because he needs the money, because guess what? He doesn't. So before you go holding up banners that say CM Punk, CM Punk, we want CM Punk, remember this, CM Punk does not want you, because if he did, he'd be there for you. If he did, he'd be in some independent wrestling organization somewhere. If he did, he'd be showing himself on the indie circuit like Cody Rhodes or any of these other guys who really truly love wrestling but felt they got a raw deal from the WWE. That's all. So this isn't a man like Cody Rhodes who said, look, I really love wrestling and I'm not getting a chance to do what I want to do here. That's the story CM Punk will tell you. But the truth of the matter is, when it comes down to, hey, you know, CM Punk, will you do this show for us, you know, in Chicago, which I'm sure Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks have asked. Don't hold your breath, because, and if they do get CM Punk, He'll take, 50% of the gate and leave them high and dry and say, well, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me whether you make money. All that matters to me is I get my big fat paycheck. So I got to tell you right off the bat that it gets me a little aggravated when people who are really trying to entertain you and really do care about the sport get in the ring and have to listen to chants of CM Punk. So let's just start with that and get that out of the way, Mike. I'm starting to really get annoyed with that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, especially if you watched the thing on Hulk Hogan on Fox News last night. He all but said that if they would have him back, he would go back to the WWE like that. If they would have him back, you know, he's another one of these guys that in his 60s, he loves wrestling. Unlike Brock Lesnar, unlike CM Punk, to name two, we know what Brock Lesnar's there for. He's there for the money. You know, you pay him enough, he's going to be there. You know, and
correct.
I would say that Punk is much the same way. You know.
Yeah, Punk's trying to be the same way, you know, but here's the deal. Punk's not Brock Lesnar. You know, Brock Lesnar went over to MMA and made a huge impact, so then he began to be able to call his own shots a little bit. CM Punk is the guy that wants to call his own shots without being that guy, you know. It's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So what is he doing now? He's training for another MMA fight, and I'm sure, like, he doesn't even watch Monday Night Raw, so I'm sure he doesn't even hear the CM Punk chant. So what really is – what's the point? What you're really saying, fans, when you're doing that during a match is we don't want to see who's in the ring, but you've already paid a ticket to see who's in the ring. You've already paid that ticket. So it's not cheering for a guy – who you say, oh, we're hoping he'll come back. If there were still fans saying we want Neville, I'd be like, well, okay. Because there's a chance Neville will come back, and they're letting the WWE know we really do want him. So if you guys can work something out, that would be great. Because we do want to see him. I wouldn't have a big problem with that. I'd still think it was a little disrespectful. But I get where the fans are coming from. But how many years has this been? CM Punk doesn't give a damn. He didn't give a damn when you were the ones cheering for him. How many times have we reported stories here where he stormed right by people, didn't want to spend 2 seconds taking a picture with a fan, didn't want to give anybody the time of day, thought he was above and beyond everybody else in this business, and thought this is a man who had such a big ego, he thought he could walk into not just an MMA ring, a UFC MMA ring, having zero professional fights. And truthfully and honestly said, I'm better than these guys. And got beat like a dog. Everybody within the sound of my voice could have done that, what CM Punk did. What did he do? He danced around for 30 seconds, and the second he was taken down, he tapped out. I can do that. You can do that. Everybody can do that. So let's calm down, shall we, on the CM Punk stuff. Now, Maniac in the chat room is saying Punk was never really a big draw outside and won't be outside, be able to make it outside of wrestling. There was a very narrow window where Punk was a draw. And then that became passé. And it was only these, like, rebellious fans who somehow thought that everything he said was unscripted and come right from his mind, when in reality that's not the truth. And he's not been a draw outside of wrestling. What has he done? He went to the UFC, and Dana White said, I don't even think his next fight should be in UFC, although it appears it might be. So he ripped Dana White off of all kinds of – I didn't see him saying to Dana White, you know what? I was a bum. I'll take way less money. I know I signed this big contract for this fight, but I really didn't deliver, and I don't feel right about taking it. No, he's like, show me the money. So, come on, folks. Ease up. Ease up on the damn CM Punk thing. Sabretooth, that's getting old.
Oh, yeah, it really is, man. And I was, and believe me, I mean, I was the biggest CM Punk fan back in the day, man. And that's what those fans, like the truth hurts. You know, like you said, he doesn't really care about the business. I mean, like you said, if he cared, he'd be out there still doing it in somebody's federation. But what makes me mad, though, is that you got these fans here who are cheering CM Punk all day, but they'll boo Roman Reigns, guys like Roman Reigns and John Cena, guys who, you know, have a love for the business, you know. They'll boo them, but they'll cheer CM Punk all day. That's what gets my goat.
Yeah, it's getting to the point of nonsense now. Now it's just nonsense. But anyway, let's get on with the review. We start out with John Cena, who comes out to a mix of more cheers than I actually thought from a Chicago crowd, but, you know, his share of boos too. He does a nice thing. He gives a kid in the audience who clearly has some issues, his shirt and his hat right off his back. I mean, John Cena could single-handedly drag the leader of ISIS into a wrestling ring and be beating him up, and a third of the audience would be cheering for the ISIS guy. I just don't know what more you can do. But to the credit, the fans didn't totally blow him off, probably because he gave his shirt and his hat to the kid. Elias comes out, and this is a good sign. I had about, oh, I don't know, 6-7 people write to me last night and say, "Oh, your boy Elias is going to get jobbed to John Cena. Your boy Elias is going to get jobbed. You know, what do you think? The WWE's ruining him." I said, "They're not ruining him at all. If the WWE thinks Elias is good enough to get in there with John Cena and give him the type of fight he gave him, which was like a 20-minute fight, they must be very high on Elias. They must be very high on Elias. Elias, by losing, still got the rub from John Cena. Now, was this a good match? No, not really. I'm an Elias fan, but I'm not going to lie to you either. Elias needs to polish some things up. He is on that precipice of coming to the next level, and he's got to be a little more exciting in the ring. Now, I don't know whether he runs out of gas or he just has a limited knowledge of what he wants to do. He's kind of a throwback to old school wrestlers where he just punches and kicks and headlock, and fans find it boring. But there's ways to get around it, because I got news for you. Samoa Joe did next to nothing in what fans are going to say was an awesome match with Roman Reigns. What did he do? He jabbed, he jabbed, he jabbed, he jabbed, he jabbed. He headbutted, he headbutted, he headbutted. He ran him into the corner. And one or two other moves. It's not like Joe was exactly Dean Malenko last night either, but the fans were excited about it. Elias tends to have these moments in his matches where it drags, and fans are looking around saying, "Move, do something, let's get it going." So somebody's got to put a bug in his ear, because he's right on the cusp right now. He's on the cusp of being the next level. And the fact, Todd, that he was in there with John Cena, that proves it to me. I don't care whether he won or lost. The fact is, they thought enough of him to put him in there with Cena and let him give Cena a really good match, a really hard match.
You're absolutely right there. Don't be surprised you see him go up to the upper mid-card, like for like an Intercontinental title or a U.S. title sometime in the near future.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, you don't put a guy in there with John Cena in the opening match with no commercial breaks, by the way, if you don't have some faith in him that this is going to be a guy we're going to use in the very near future in a larger capacity, Mike.
No, you don't. And look, he needs to thank John Cena. John Cena put him over big. Yeah, it was a loss, but that's not the point. The point is John Cena put you over big, dude.
Yeah, really big. I mean, Cena sold him a lot. Give credit to John Cena. I know people are going to say, "Oh, yeah, naturally John Cena had to come back to squash Elias." No, it wasn't like that at all. John Cena sold the hell out of Elias. What was the announcers talking about afterwards? Not John Cena comes back and he's able to beat a great guy like Elias. No. They were talking about, did you see the fight Elias gave a man who's been 16-time champion? This is the real deal. That's what matters the most to me, Sabretooth.
I agree, but I've got a few issues with the whole setup of it. like when after he cold cocked John Cena alive, you know, he makes the match, he called for a referee, and like a referee runs down. And I think like Corey Graves or either Michael Cole said, well, Kurt Angle took the referee down. So I'm like, okay, so that doesn't seem right. Okay, Kurt Angle just knows that John Cena just got cold cocked and is probably not fit for a match, but he took like a referee down. I mean, I would have just like had like Kurt Angle come out and say, you don't make matches out here, it's not going to happen. And have like John Cena say, no, I'll fight him. You know, Kurt Angle should have like more of a say in that match. And also, at the end of the match, John Cena could have like sold it a bit better, though. I mean, he didn't like act like he was like, I mean, like he didn't act like he'd been through a hell of a match. And he was still like saluting and doing his usual thing, which I mean, like he could have like sold it more. But other than that, it was.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but at the end of the day, the WWE made a conscientious decision to place Elias in the ring with John Cena, and to tell both people in the ring, this is going to be a very competitive match. At one point, Corey Graves said, Elias has dominated 85% of this match. And he really, really did. So he didn't come off looking bad for the loss. Elias came off looking like, look, he needs a little time, but this is a man who took Cena to the limit right now. What's going to happen this coming year as he gets better and better? So I wasn't unhappy with that. I thought, to be honest with you, I thought that was okay. Plus, the song was really funny. I don't know, Sabretooth, if you were like me, but for a half second, I said, are they going to turn Elias right here? When Elias said, you know what, maybe you're right. Maybe I've been a bit of a jerk, and he actually sang the song. They actually bluffed me a little bit. I knew they were going to go one way or the other. I knew they were going to have him attack Cena, or someone else was going to come out of the locker room, and maybe him and Cena were going to tag or something. But there was a second there when I thought they're going to pull the trigger on Elias flipping.
Yeah, I did too, because like I mean, he's like sitting there with the guitar, and I was like, thought he was like him with the guitar, but he never did it. I'm like, okay, maybe he's like John Cena, like get like too close for him to use that guitar. So I'm like, okay, maybe I was going to like turn him heel, but like he just cold cocked him, and that was like a pretty stiff punch he gave him too, man. I mean, I felt that. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, for a half second there, I said, geez. They're going to turn Elias right here on the spot, which I thought would be too soon, so I'm kind of glad they didn't do it. Anyway, look, wasn't a bad match. There were times when that match wasn't great, I'm not going to lie. But for what it accomplished, it shows a couple of things to the WWE. Number one, Elias is not a guy you're going to get a 20-minute match out of. He's just not that guy. Elias is good in, you know, 8-10 minute matches. That's it. You book him for 8-10-12 minutes. That's it. You're trying to push 20 out of the guy. It's not going to happen. You're going to get those large rest holds and those pauses in the match. But there were a couple of good spots in that match, I thought. Anyway, Hideo Itami comes out, which is adding fuel to the fire, because you know what his finishing maneuver is, and you know the fans are going to chant CM Punk, and it's like the WWE's way of saying F you, I guess. And to be honest, Hideo Itami against Brian Kendrick, Itami should have got a huge pop. Itami got no pop. And came off, to me, like a heel. Yelling and screaming with a mean face on, you will respect me. That doesn't sound like a face. I don't get it. I just don't get it. And then, I don't know, for the benefit of you people who did not watch the replay, I was trying to find out if Brian Kendrick really had a busted nose or had any kind of a issue, because that go to sleep connected. And the WWE, to their credit, pointed it out and said, let's take a look at the replay. And not only the replay from a weird angle where you can't see what happens, they replayed it from an angle where you could see contact. And I was like, damn, man, he just leveled him, Mike, with that move.
He really did, and you don't. I mean, to me, I'm not sure, and I'm not sure what's going on with this. And again, we've said it before, the whole Kendrick Gallagher thing. It's sort of a mismatch, you know. I mean, they need to do some. I don't know what they're going for with this, but they probably do need to find a way to do something to get those two guys apart.
I agree with you. It's wasting Jack Gallagher, in my opinion, Sabretooth. Gallagher is better alone.
Right. And while Kendrick was like standing there talking and like you saw like Jack Gallagher standing there making those like expressions, the first thing that came to my head was that idea you had as to where get like a bunch of English guys together and put them together. I mean, like, because those expressions that he was making, that would fit right in with that gimmick that you proposed, get like a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen or something,
Jack Gallagher, Pete Dunne, and Rockstar Spud. Those are the three guys. You put them in a little bit of a group. You call them the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. You have Rockstar Spud and Gallagher be the quieter, the more refined people. And Pete Dunne is like their pit bull, who if you give us too much trouble, we'll set him loose on you. That would work.
Right, because I'm like sitting there watching those face expressions he was making while like Kendrick was talking, and I'm like, man, you put like a bunch of put your idea in motion. I mean, that would be like the perfect thing for him to be like, while friends are talking, he could be like making those expressions, like, you know, get these like a bunch of like upper crust tea drinking British guys out there and just. And also, he had nothing to do with that match. I mean, so what's he doing? I mean,
I don't know. He didn't interfere in the match in any way. I know. Maniac in the chat room saying Gallagher needs to go solo. He kind of does. He needs to get away from Kendrick. I don't know if he needs to go solo, but I like this idea. The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Pete Dunne, Rockstar Spud, Jack Gallagher, that's gold. You fly that up the flagpole, that's going to work, I guarantee you. Anyway, we get Absolution. They come out against Bayley, Mickey James, and Sasha. And Bayley gets a huge, huge reaction from a Chicago crowd who likes basically nobody. And I'm saying to myself, well, maybe this is it. Maybe this is the beginning of the rehabbing of Bayley. There's a huge amount of people holding hugger section signs. There's a lot of kids on the aisleway waiting for a hug or waiting for a hand slap and you know, all that kind of stuff. It gets a tremendous ovation. There were times when people were chanting, "We want Bayley." They also chanted, "We want Paige." But that's understandable. They haven't seen her in a while. And I said to myself, you got Mickey James at 40 or close to it. Got Sasha Banks and Bayley. Mickey James has got to take this fall. Absolution can't lose. If Absolution loses, this is a nightmare because they've already done that to the Riot Squad and ruined that. So I'm saying Absolution has to win here, but they're probably going to pick off Mickey James. Nope. It's Bayley, whose job in the WWE is take the pinfall for everybody else. And I'm telling you right now, there's someone in the WWE high up that does not like Bayley. And I defy anybody to tell me I'm wrong, because anytime they have the chance to rub salt into the wound of Bayley, they do it. It's not like they look at the mistake and say, uh-oh, we got a rehabber. No, they do exactly the opposite. You can't tell me that Corey Graves and company didn't have their old headsets on and they're being told to say, you know, Bayley's good, but she's just not that. She can't pull the trigger. That's what they're saying about her now. Now they even got Corey Graves saying it. Bayley just can't pull the trigger. She's a good athlete, but she can't get over that hump. For God's sake. Do you really have to prove the fans wrong this much that you just say we're ignoring the fact that she's obviously the most popular? And we're just going to make you stop cheering her by making her a dog. Do you really have to do that? This really stunned me, Mike. I really thought it would be Mickey James taking a pin.
Right, but this shouldn't surprise you. They've done this over and over and over again with different people. I mean, we saw it with Jack Swagger. We saw it with, you know, we've seen them do it with Titus several times, you know, and they just continually bite off the hand that feeds them, bite their nose off to spite their face and all that type of stuff, because these guys, we know how popular Bayley is, and we know that the fans want her to be popular, but it's like the old thumb to the eye to the fans, you know?
It's even more than that. I mean, it's getting to the point where it's getting to the point where it's painful. I'm sitting here watching it and I'm saying, what more do you want this girl to do? They're actually starting to make me mad. And this should not be the reaction. See, this is the problem when wrestling became so mainstream that everybody's a smart fan. You're sitting there watching it, and while you should be mad at the heel for beating Bayley, you're mad at the bookers. You know, you're saying to yourself, well, this is ridiculous. How many times are you going to do this? How many times are you going to degrade Bayley? And I guess that's part of the problem with the modern-day wrestling, Sabretooth, is too many smart fans know who to blame.
This is not Sabretooth.
Oh, okay, sorry. Let's go with Todd.
You're absolutely right there. I blame the bookers for booking this way, to have her to get pinned all the time. With Bayley, like you said, I'd rather have Mickie James get pinned, the job out, than the other two.
Well, you would think that that would be logical, since she probably is the one they have the least amount of plans for, Sabretooth, but I guess not.
Yeah, man, and I was like you, man. I mean, when she was coming out to her intro, and when Corey Graves, he said that, you know, she's the type of girl that fans want to cheer, but they can't because she can't pull that trigger. And I'm like, damn, even they're saying what we're thinking now. So, yeah, you know, yeah, I'm like, wow. You just – I mean, and yeah, man, and it's a damn shame, man, because because they had the opportunity. Like you said, man, someone higher up doesn't like this girl. Someone higher up just doesn't like her.
No, they have to. Now, I mean, Maniac is saying it could be Stephanie. I don't know who it is. I don't know if it's Stephanie because Triple H seemed to like her just fine. I don't know it is. I don't know what the hell is going on. But Sabretooth, they don't miss an opportunity to drive a nail in her coffin.
Right. And going back to Sunday, you know, with the whole misused worker. I mean, with that obvious storyline that she had with Alexa Bliss. I mean, when they dropped the ball on that, you had to ask yourself, was that intentional? I mean, then tonight, I mean, either she rubbed somebody the wrong way or something. But the only problem thing was.
Hold on, let me get you back here. Go ahead.
The only positive thing I took from that match was, like, that was the best I've seen out of Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. I mean, like, they were pretty good. Like, I mean, like, they were decent last night. That was the best I've seen out of them. That was the only positive I got out of that match.
Yeah, I mean, look, they did the right thing. The right team won and everything, but I'm very annoyed that Bayley is just being treated this way, especially when she's getting these good reactions. I mean, I thought that's what it's all about. I thought the promoters feed off the reaction of the fans and then say, okay, we got something to happen in here. Let's push it and see how far we go. Not, she's getting cheered. Keep her losing until nobody cheers her anymore. And that's what it seems to be. It's very unusual. The WWE definitely dropped the ball with Bayley. The problem is I think they did it on purpose as opposed to they just effed up. So anyway, we get to Heath Slater versus Kane. Part of Rhino's "we're going to toughen you up." And I guess we see what's coming a mile away. I'm glad they have a program and something to do, but this is very obvious that Slater and Rhino are going to fight. Rhino has clearly said when Kurt Angle said, "we need to toughen up," he meant you need to toughen up. And I know just how to toughen you up. I'm going to throw you in there with Kane. And Slater is still over. There's a chance if he's got kids and things, but they're not going to do anything with Slater either. Slater's the comedy act who's just going to get beat up a lot, and maybe they'll have him beat Rhino, and that'll be about it for Rhino's career. That's about as far as that's going to go, and that'll probably be on a, you know, pre-show match somewhere. So there's not really a lot to talk about there. We then get Kurt Hawkins, who is alive, and on Monday Night Raw, come out and basically challenge anyone, saying, you know, I got to get lucky eventually. And out comes Finn Balor, who's now been relegated to fighting people who don't matter. The solution to the Finn Balor problem of, well, he's kind of over, so we don't want him to lose a lot, but we don't like him that much, so we can't have him beat anybody good, is to just keep feeding him a steady diet of people who don't matter. That's the solution. First, it was Kurt, Angle, or Axel. Then it was Curtis. Then it was Bo Dallas, Curtis Hawkins. At one point, it was Dallas and Axel together. they just keep feeding him a steady diet of people that don't matter. He's mid-card city, folks. Finn Balor's mid-card city. And I don't see him climbing out of it, to be perfectly honest with you. So if you like Finn Balor, I guess you just got to relegate yourself to saying, well, he's gonna have these feuds in the lower mid-card, and that's where it's going to be. Now, I don't claim to be a psychologist, but when I see Finn Balor come out the last 2 or 3 weeks, he doesn't look like a happy man. And we'll see what happens there. But if I venture to guess, I would guess that Balor isn't happy, and we'll see where that goes. Again, I mean, it wasn't really a match. We knew Hawkins would lose from the beginning. He got in a couple of shots, Mike. No big deal.
Right, and it's almost to the point of he's unhappy. You put him on in Midcard City. He's unhappy. You know, it's almost to the point of, well, send him back down to NXT or send him over to 205, you know, and say, look, you're going to automatically be number one contender or top contender on 205 Live and go do your thing, you know, because you're not.
I really, really want to see that. I want to see Finn Balor on 205 Live where I can enjoy him and make it look like it's a reasonable, logical extension of his career. Because I'm really, really tired of having to watch guys, even guys like Hawkins, have to swallow hard and look like the Undertaker's coming down to the ring when 175-pound Finn Balor's music hits. It's stupid. It's just stupid. And this whole extraordinary man who does extraordinary things, what extraordinary thing did he do? Get beat up by Samoa Joe? Get clobbered by Kane? Where was the extraordinary part of this? Sabretooth, not much to talk about, just basically a squash match.
Yeah, and that pissed me off because they could have got, I mean, like, because Trey Hawkins deserves better also. I mean, like, they could have got, they could have got, like, at least a decent match there, but no, they had to have him. Now, that's what I call jobbing. Now, people talk about, like, people jobbing somebody. Kurt Hawkins jobbed last night to Finn Balor.
Right.
And they could have gotten a decent match out of those two guys. But somehow they choose to embarrass. I mean, I don't know if it's like it's not what you know, it's who you know, but they just choose to embarrass certain guys to the point as to where, you know, it pisses you off to see them treated this way.
Yeah, I mean, you know what it is? Of course you're going to get guys who have to do the job constantly. Of course you're going to get the preliminary guys who just build up the other guys. And if that's who you want Hawkins to be, that's fine. But that doesn't mean you don't have to get a good match out of it. You know, it doesn't mean that you can't have the guy give a little offense, do a little something, at least make a match. There doesn't have to be that huge of a gap, in other words. Because Finn Balor isn't Braun Strowman. I could see it. You know, Braun Strowman gets in there and whatever. I got you. Because that's the way you're making him, is that he's just a monster and nobody can stand with him for a minute. But why can't you have a really competitive match with Finn Balor? Why can't we see what Hawkins can do? Why do we have to see him stifled? It doesn't make that much sense. Okay, let him lose. But at least make it a good match. They do that too much. Not a big fan of that style of booking, and I never really have been. Squash match is okay if it's a nobody. But I don't consider Hawkins a nobody. I guess some people do. We should say that Bray Wyatt cut a really, 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 I thought a really good promo. Maybe the best one I've heard Bray Wyatt cut in a very, very long time. Because it wasn't quite as out there and eclectic. And it targeted a specific thing. It targeted Matt Hardy for basically being a guy who is capitalizing on a really stupid gimmick. And he did it in a way that doesn't really hurt Matt Hardy that much. In fact, it helps him. But that's kind of what he was saying, is this Matt Hardy thing, he's not, you think you're fighting with him, you think you're a part of his army or whatever, that's ridiculous. He's just doing it, you know, for himself. Really good promo. Then he gets out to the ring, and surprisingly enough, the Fireflies are still out in full force. He gets a big, huge cheer when he says, "Chicago, I'm here." Out he comes. As he gets in the ring, of course, he's attacked by Woken Matt Hardy. Fans pop for that, too, and start chanting, "Delete, delete, delete, delete." They got a match on their hands, these guys. You know, the WWE got a match that fans want to see. The problem is, I think fans are divided a little bit of, we like both of these guys, and whoever loses, it's going to really, really, really hurt them. And then, as God is my witness, a man who just cut a really good promo, a really intense promo, and a really heartfelt promo, had that followed up by a 40-something-year-old man just laughing into a microphone like a donkey for 2 minutes. 2 minutes. And it's just, honestly, it's embarrassing. I'm sorry. If this is the best you got, if this is what the Woken Matt Hardy thing is going to be, forget it. How quickly is this going to denigrate into fans saying we don't like it? The very reason they liked the Broken Matt Hardy gimmick in TNA is because it was very eclectic and unusual and weird. It was like a gothic Arthur. You know, remember the movie Arthur? Well, it was a little bit like that. He did weird things. He boxed with a kangaroo. He talked to a flying drone. He played the piano poorly and did all kinds of weird things. He didn't just look in a camera and go, for 5 minutes. How is that entertainment? What the hell is that? That really turned me off to this character a lot.
Right, that turned me off too. But also, a couple of times in Bray Wyatt's promo, he mentioned sheep, and we all know who that. When he mentioned sheep, we all basically he did in this promo by doing that what we said he should have done in the promo. In a promo with Finn Balor, instead of coming out and drag, he just should have mentioned her, you know. And basically, that's what he did. He just said, "She says this, and she said that, and she told me this, and she told me that." And we know when Bray Wyatt says "she," who he's talking about.
Right. Yeah, they may still yet do this character. I hate to say it, Sabretooth, but they might still be looking at a Sister Abigail revamp.
Yeah, I think they are, too. I think that's what they're leading to. But like you said earlier, though, that was a good promo because he also drew battle lines. He said, "It's your Woken Warriors against my Fireflies." So he's going to carry this feud. I mean, because, like you said, the whole laughing in the microphone with the crazy accent. And I finally figured out who he sounds like when he's talking like that. He sounds like a bad Austin Powers impersonator. That's what he sounds like. you know, Austin Powers. That's what he talks like, Austin Powers.
Yeah.
But yeah, man.
All he has to do is say, "That's a man, baby," when Sister Abigail comes out and we're all set, right? Look, if you like Matt Hardy, if you like the Broken thing, you like it. I don't know what to tell you. I don't like it. I didn't like it very much in TNA. I'm liking it a hell of a lot less here. I just don't like it. And I have this terrible, horrible feeling that Bray Wyatt is not winning this feud. And if Bray Wyatt does not beat Matt Hardy, you can pack that up and ship that off. It's done. The Bray Wyatt gimmick is over. At least that's the way I see it, Todd. What about you?
You're absolutely right. I said it before, and this is going to be the last time I'm going to say it. I hated it in TNA. I hated it even more in WWE.
Yep. So we get the Miracle on 34th Street fight. You know, that's just a fun thing, whatever you're going to do. I'm not even going to discuss it because the 205 Live guys just went in there to be funny, and it was funny, and it was okay, but this is not the type of matches I really like. I don't like to see Tozawa have to sell to being whipped into a Christmas tree. I'm not really sure how come a Christmas tree hurts. You would think the buckle would hurt a hell of a lot worse than landing on a Christmas tree. It's not a cactus. It's a Christmas tree. It's an artificial one at that. So, you know, it is what it is. We got the backstage segment with Enzo who almost kisses Nia Jax until she's interrupted by Alexa Bliss. Alexa Bliss says, I need to talk to you about the Royal Rumble, and then nothing happens. Except Alexa Bliss comes out by herself, takes full credit for the women getting the Royal Rumble match by themselves. And then Asuka comes out to a very small smattering of NXT fans chanting Asuka, and the rest of the people could not care less. And Asuka grabs a mic, and I'm like, oh boy, here we go. Here we go. And all she really says is, I'm entering the Royal Rumble, and I'm going to win because no one is ready for Asuka. Well, here's what I'm not ready for, Asuka. I'm not ready for you to be a face and do heel promos. Anyone within the sound of my voice who thinks that she didn't come off as a heel while Alexa Bliss came off as an underdog face, I don't know what to tell you. I was thinking, oh, Nia Jax is going to come out from behind and they're going to ambush Asuka. That was what the whole thing was. No, nothing happened. So you're sitting there going, okay, well, I don't know. Asuka looks like the big bad, I can beat you with a snap of my finger, and then unprovoked, kicks her right in the face. Unprovoked. I'm not sure how this is a face. I'm not sure how they're making Asuka a face behind this, Mike. It's very confusing.
I don't get it either. I don't get what they're going after with this whole Enzo Nia Jax Nia thing. I mean, we all know, or people on the show should know, that he's actually dating Liv Morgan. You know, now, I mean, I don't know what they're going after with him kissing Nia Jax. I mean, maybe they're doing it as a player or something. I don't know. But I don't know where this is going with this whole Enzo Nia Jax thing.
I'm not sure either. I'm not sure what they're trying to do. Fans are digging it. Fans are chanting yes, yes, yes when he's going to kiss her and the whole nine yards. The danger of this is, again, these are two heels. These are two heels. Why are you giving all of the – you're doing it exactly backwards. It drives me crazy when the WWE does this. So Asuka gets in the ring and unprovoked kicks a girl who most fans like directly in the face for no reason and says, no one is ready for Asuka. That's a bad guy. That's a heel move. Backstage, two heels, Nia Jax and Enzo, get caught under the mistletoe and almost kiss. That's a heel move? And then they're interrupted. It's mind-boggling, Sabretooth, how they fuck this up by giving the exact opposite rub to heels and faces.
Right. I just want to go. I just want to go back to that whole Christmas tree match they had. Why would you put your champion and number one contender in a match like that?
I just don't know. Left.
I mean, can you imagine them putting like Brock Lesnar in something like that, or AJ Styles in a match like that?
Yeah, not happening.
That was so disrespectful to them, I think.
Yeah, it was basically them saying, look, you guys don't get any pop anyway, so we're going to add this, and it's just going to be a fun match. It was fairly disrespectful. I agree with that. But, hey, you know, the 205 crew, they do what they can do, I guess, and they get their spots where they can get them. So what are you going to say? Anyway, we then get the whole Jason Jordan thing. This is a very interesting thing because Dean Ambrose, number one, Dean Ambrose is not going to be out 9 months. I love when the WWE does this, you know. They always give you a prognosis that sounds like, well, he was hit by a car and drugged city blocks, and then a school bus hit him on top of that, and then a dog came and shit him out over a cliff. And he'll be gone for 17 years. Oh, my God, he's been back in 3 months. He's Superman. They always do that. Dean Ambrose is not going to be out in 9 months. They're saying could be three. Could be a little bit more than three, but right around three. Still going to keep him out of the Royal Rumble and probably WrestleMania. So now they've done this thing where Jason Jordan is going to be partnered with Seth Rollins. And Seth Rollins doesn't like it, and they're going to take on the Bar. And Jason Jordan, in very typical heel fashion, they're getting Jason Jordan right at least, says, you know, let's face it, I'm a really good replacement for Ambrose. To which Seth Rollins says, look, let's get one thing straight. You're no Dean Ambrose, and you're never going to be. To which Jordan replies, no, I'm going to be better. So we already get this rub, and we already know where this is going, by the way. Since they were setting up Dean Ambrose versus Seth Rollins for WrestleMania, and that's very much in question, you can bet your bottom dollar it will be Jason Jordan, Seth Rollins. That's where this is going to lead. Seth Rollins is going to play the part of the guy who reluctantly says, you know, he's a green kid, but he's really, really good. He's very, very talented. I won't be too hard on him. I'm beginning to like him a little bit. He's all right. You know, he's got a big head on his shoulders, but didn't we all? And, you know, he's okay. And we're going to get the other half, which is Jason Jordan saying, I'm the team. Rollins is the dead weight. And that's going to cause the fallout. So what do you think of their segment, Mike?
I like that segment. I also like the backstage segment with the bar, you know, where they were giving, they gave each other the two gifts, and one of them was an action figure of Dean Ambrose without an arm, and
right,
the other one was Seth Rollins and stuff, and the car. Now, granted, one thing they're going to have to do is they're going to have to find a way to, if this is going to be the wind down for the bar because of the injury, the long-term injury with Sheamus, they're going to have to find a way to get him to take that thing out of his mouth so we can understand him better, you know, as he's doing his interviews. I'm talking about Cesaro.
Yeah, the mouthpiece. Yeah, that is a problem, but I guess he has to keep it in there to keep the teeth straight, or I don't know what the situation is. It's that's a nightmare. But they're using Sheamus the right way. Team, he's protected. He can always tag out. He doesn't have to do a lot of the work. At this stage of the game, you might not see Sheamus do a lot of solo stuff for a while, maybe forever. I don't know. Anyway, the Mr. Raj all night long, we're getting huge pops going around doing Christmas carols and wishing everybody a mystery Christmas or Merry Christmas or whatever the hell it was. It's pretty funny. They did a good job. And the reward for it was basically that they were fed to Braun Strowman. Which, once again, see, this is what I'm trying to say about the WWE. How does that make Kurt Angle look like a good guy? How does that make Braun Strowman look like a good guy? Here's two guys who were doing no harm backstage, singing Christmas carols, yes, about the Miz, but still. Getting a good pop from the audience. And then here comes Braun Strowman to destroy them at Kurt Angle's behest. How's that a face move? I don't get it. The WWE does this all the time. They will take an obvious heel tactic and apply it to a face, and an obvious face tactic and apply it to a heel till you don't really have faces and heels. So Braun Strowman, yes, gets the chant one more time because nobody cares about these two guys at this point. So they're just like, whatever, we want to see Braun Strowman demolish people, so that's good enough. And he demolishes them. I mean, it was what it was, Mike.
It really was. And look, this is, again, another thing that is emblematic of the WWE. I mean, remember right before Maurice left, what was one of the things Miz was doing was, well, my beautiful wife and my unborn baby. That's not a heel line. That's not a heel. And by doing this with these two guys, that's not a heel thing. It's almost as if they want you to believe that they're going to turn these three guys.
The problem, Mike, is what we have said from the very beginning. The heels cannot be the most entertaining part of the show. If they are, they're not heels. They got to be the ones ruining the entertainment, not being the entertainment. So anyway, Samoa Joe fights Roman Reigns in what everyone's going to call a really great match, and it was a good match. It was a good match. Look, I didn't think the belt was going to change hands. Not here. And I didn't think that Samoa Joe would get pinned. So I was kind of thinking we're going to get a double count out or a double disqualification or something. And we ended up with Roman Reigns being disqualified and then beating the living hell out of Samoa Joe, had to retreat. I thought that was fine, Sabretooth. I thought it was a good match overall, and I thought it had an okay ending.
Yeah, it was an okay match. But I don't know. I mean, but something about him, the way he did after the match, though, I mean, like, that was kind of like hillish, though, what he was doing to Samoa Joe, though. I mean, I can see, like, you know, like maybe, like, maybe like a Superman punch, you know, but he was, I mean, but he, I mean, but he was trying to, I mean, but it was kind of hillish, though.
It was, very but hill. Then you've got that one stipulation that, well, you did this to Ambrose backstage, and that's my brother, so I'm going to do it to you. And they portrayed Roman Reigns that way anyway, trying to kill Braun Strowman with an ambulance and all kinds of other things. So it's not really that out of character for Roman Reigns. So I was okay with that, Todd. What do you think of the match overall?
It was not a great match, but it was a good match. like you said, it had spots here and there. But
I didn't expect to see a winner. I didn't expect to see a clear winner. Did you?
No.
No, I don't think most people did. So it was okay for what it was. Mike, what did you think overall of the ending? I mean, a lot of people said, I was disappointed. I was looking for a big, you know, clean finish. I knew you wouldn't get one.
I knew that too, and I was really expecting what happened. I mean, this is him standing up for his brother. You know, you did this. You took his arm. I'm gonna take yours. That's an old school wrestling thing. That's a horseman type thing that you would see happen in the good old days of the horseman, where, okay, you broke a Tully Blanchard's leg or something, or broke his foot or did something. Okay, we're going to take your arm and slam it in a door, you know, and break your arm. That was what that was.
Right. Now, before we get into the main event, we have to say that our last show, we gave Booker T the Worst Announcer Award, and the fans did as well. My God. Were we right? Was this maybe the worst you've heard Booker T? At one point, he said something outrageous, like they were mentioning that Samoa Joe was a southpaw, and he said, well, if you use the opposite hand, you know, you throw off your equilibrium. And they're like, what the hell are you talking about? He's left-handed. He's not using his opposite hand. Yeah, but that'll throw you. I don't even believe he pays attention to the matches. I honestly don't even believe he pays attention to the matches. I think he's over there just, I don't know what he's doing, playing Candy Crush on a cell phone, I guess, because he sure as hell isn't paying attention 90% of the time. Then he says, well, Jason Jordan doesn't have any respect for the business. No, of course he doesn't. And you're basing that on what? That he's a tag team partner of Seth Rollins, so therefore he has no respect for the business? That he worked in NXT to get up here and he has no respect for the business? I don't even know. I don't know what universe Booker T is living on, Sabretooth, but it's getting really annoying.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, I heard him say that, and I'm like, what the hell has he done to say that he has no respect for the business? I mean, like, if he has no respect for the business, then, like, you come out there, like, disrespecting the veterans or whatever, or, like, straight, like, disrespecting people. Jason Jordan has done none of that. All he wants is an opportunity. I mean, like, yeah, he's like a whiny brat, but he has done nothing to show that he has no respect for the business, though. So I was like, what?
And did you hear his other line about how if you punch with the opposite hand, it throws your equilibrium off, even though they clearly said he's a southpaw?
Right. I mean, like you say, I mean, like, you get Corey Graves, Michael Cole, like, what the hell are you talking about, Booker?
It's ridiculous. I think they even know.
I don't know if that's a work when they do that, or are they actually feeling that, what the hell are you talking about? I mean, I'm like, man.
You know, I used to think it was a work. I don't think it is anymore. I really think that they just said, you know what, if Booker T goes off on a tangent, just call him on it. Because if we don't call him on it, we lose our credibility. You know, so we have to call him on it, because, you know, every fan is out there saying, what the hell is he talking about? So we have to, too. It reached a maximum peak last night. There were times when I just couldn't even bear that Booker T was going to be on this microphone. They got to get rid of him. He's not entertaining. He's actually distracting. Now, this match, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Jason Jordan in this character is going to be gold for two reasons. One, he plays it perfectly. Two, he can deliver a good match. Oftentimes, you'll get a guy who's so great on the mic, and then they really can't deliver in the ring, and you're like, eh, the build-up's always better than the match. This is the rare combination where the match can be just as good as the build-up or vice versa. Jason Jordan has this character down. The fans are 100% buying it. The fans are not into this as far as him being a good guy. They already know he's targeted as a heel, and they're booing the hell out of him. This is a good sign. And he can deliver in the ring, and this was a good match. And I was shocked because I did not think they'd win the tag team belts. I figured, well, no, they're going to keep them around Sheamus and Cesaro a while because Ambrose is out and they'll have to start something else, maybe bring a team up from NXT or something. They'll have to do something. But no, Jason Jordan gets the pin. And we have new tag team champions. I was really, really, really surprised, Mike. Didn't think it would happen.
This is a point, you know, where they kind of backed into this thing with Jason Jordan because think about this. What were we saying when he was together with Gable? You know, they had no personality. They couldn't find a way to bring the personality out in them. And look at what's happening now. They kind of backed into finding a way to bring this personality out of Jason Jordan, you know? I mean, it's like they backed into this thing with him.
And he's a natural heel because he is one of those guys that for some reason, just his demeanor, just his look, his smile, his attitude screams heel to me, Sabretooth.
Right. Right, like they said, I mean, like the director sells him to a corner because he's supposed to be a heel, but at the same time, you want to, I mean, like you're getting good matches out of this guy. I mean, like, you want to see this guy in the ring. And when he wrestles, he doesn't wrestle like a heel. I mean, he was handling Sheamus. I mean, the way I mean, he gave a hell of a match. I mean, he was throwing Sheamus around like he was nothing last night. I mean,
yeah.
And the fact that they
can deliver,
belt,
he can deliver in that ring 100%, Todd, and that's going to make a much better heel.
Yeah, absolutely, right there. I wouldn't be surprised. By the points, sometimes in the match, sometimes I saw in the match with Jason Jordan, it looks like he was about to walk away, and looked like I got that feeling he's going to turn on Seth Rollins here.
That's what I thought was going to happen. I thought he was going to walk away from it or pretend to be hurt or whatever, but it didn't happen. So let's go to our ratings. This week's Raw for me is a solid C. It's in the middle. There were some things here I didn't like with the Bayley thing. There was a couple of squash matches that were useless. But the two main matches I thought were very good, Mike. What's your rating?
I'm going to go ahead and say a C as well. And look, what's going to be interesting tonight is to see how that first hour goes without them going to commercial break.
That's right. No commercial break tonight. So you got yourself 60 minutes of solid SmackDown. Sabretooth, your rating?
I'm going to give it a B-. Simply
okay.
Because like it was a Christmas show and those belts changed hands on the Christmas show. I got swerved last night. My jaw dropped when those tag belts.
I got swerved a bit too. I never saw that coming. Todd, what's your rating?
I got to give it a C.
Okay, so we got two C's, a B-. And we will see you on Friday with our SmackDown report. Thanks for listening. Merry Christmas.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.